Jerusalem. Our feet are standing in your gates, O Jerusalem. Our hands are raised in praise to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Welcome to Jerusalem Next. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown. In this week's news, did Russia send a malware message through Ukraine to the United States over war escalation and threats from the White House towards Syria? An unprecedented cyber attack took out major banks, government, and airport computers in Ukraine this week and then spread across the globe. But what does that have to do with the fall of Damascus? Well, to find out, let's first examine the news. Not only was Ukraine hit, but Russian energy firms and a Danish shipping company were also hit by hackers in what may have been a diversionary tactic to keep authorities from suspecting Russian involvement. Russia may have had an ulterior motive for perpetrating the attack, and it is now being reported that the attack appears to be an effort to bring down Ukraine, which is a proxy battleground between the U.S. and Russia. A growing consensus among security researchers armed with technical evidence suggests the main purpose of the attack was to install new malware on computers at government and commercial organizations in Ukraine. Rather than extortion, the goal may be to plant the seeds of future sabotage, according to experts. In the very least, the attack probably also was meant to send a message to the White House. But what was that message? Well, let's examine this. Companies across the globe reported that they have been struck by a major ransomware cyber attack, but that attack started in Ukraine. Ukraine's national bank, state power company, and largest airport are among the targets of this huge cyber attack on the government infrastructure there, and the list of affected countries, institutions, and infrastructure just grew from there. While the cyber attack was in process, a terrorist incident was going on in Ukraine. Was this a coincidence or part of a greater concerted war effort by Russia against Ukraine? The cyber attack, which came one day before Ukraine marked its Constitution Day, struck only hours after a high-ranking intelligence officer was assassinated in a car bombing in Kiev. Police said Colonel Maxim Shapoval, a member of the Defense Ministry's main intelligence directorate, was killed in the terrorist attack. Ukraine's cyber attack came just hours after the car bomb killed this senior Ukrainian military intelligence officer. Ukraine has blamed Russia for the repeated cyber attacks targeting crucial infrastructure recently and during the past 3 years, including one on its power grid that left part of western Ukraine temporarily without electricity in December 2015. News reports showed an image of the display that appeared on all computers of the Ukraine government and even on grocery store terminals. The photo showed a PC displaying a message claiming the disk contains errors and needs to be repaired, said the message, and it instructed the users not to turn off their computers. Images from other affected computers and disabled cache points showed what appeared to be ransomware demanding a payment of $300, that's 235 euro, in Bitcoin to regain access to its encrypted files. Analysts said the virus, named PetraRap or Petya, appeared to work similarly to the WannaCry ransomware that infected more than 230,000 computers in 150 countries last month. Ukrainian state-run aircraft manufacturer Antonov was among the companies hit, along with power distributor Ukrenergo, which said the attack had not affected its power supplies. But the National Bank of Ukraine said an unknown virus was to blame, saying several unnamed Ukrainian banks were affected, along with financial firms. Ashad Bank, one of Ukraine's largest state-owned lenders, said some of its services had been affected by the hacking attack, but guaranteed that customer data was safe. The Boryspil International Airport in Kiev was also down. Its flight schedule board was not working. But the biggest threat came because the hack caused authorities in the Chernobyl exclusion zone to switch to manual radiation monitoring at that nuclear plant. The Ukrpashta State Postal Service, television stations, and transport were also affected by the attack, which left Kiev Metro passengers unable to pay using their bank cards. Many ATMs were disabled, displaying the message left by hackers, as were tills in supermarkets. This simply shows us how vulnerable the global interconnected electronic systems truly are. The cyber attack began to affect institutions globally as well. British advertising agency WPP was among those to say its IT systems had been disrupted as a consequence. The Russian oil giant Rosneft and a subsidiary Bashneft were also hit, as was Norway's National Security Authority that said an international company there was affected, and Martin Poles, a spokesman for the Port of Rotterdam, said APM Shipping Company was targeted. Dutch-based transport company TNT Express suffered computer disruptions. U.S.-based pharmaceutical firm Merck also said it was hit. Experts suggested the malware took advantage of the same system weaknesses used by the WannaCry attack last month. It initially appeared to be a variant of a piece of ransomware that emerged last year. The Russian cybersecurity firm Kaspersky Lab reported that it believed the malware was a new ransomware that has not been seen before, despite its resemblance to the new Petya that recently emerged. According to security firm Kaspersky Lab, preliminary findings suggest the attacks are from a new ransomware which is now being called not Petya. Kaspersky added that it had detected suspected attacks in Poland, Italy, Germany, France, and the U.S., in addition to the U.K., Russia, and Ukraine, describing it as another serious ransomware attack. Europol director Rob Wainwright said there were clear similarities with the WannaCry attack, but also indications of a more sophisticated attack capable of exploiting a range of vulnerabilities. In other words, the WannaCry ransomware was just a trial run for a new, not Petya, run of attacks. Researchers said Tuesday's attacks used a Windows flaw called Eternal Blue to spread through corporate networks. WannaCry also leveraged the Eternal Blue exploit, which was leaked as part of a trove of hacking tools believed to belong to the NSA. Microsoft issued a patch for that exploit in March and said it is aware of the reports and is investigating again. A spokesman for the security firm Recorded Future told the BBC that such attacks would not stop now because cyber thieves have found them too lucrative. But keep listening, because I don't believe that the money is the reason for this attack. The result of the attack was that firms began paying the ransomware demands, which will make it almost impossible to stop future ransomware attacks if indeed this was the purpose of the attack, which I don't think it was, but it does seem to be a lucrative way for hackers to make money, and a South Korean hosting firm did pay $1 million to get their data back, which is a huge incentive for the inventors of ransomware. But a Bitcoin wallet associated with the outbreak received only the amount equivalent to $3,500. And an email address associated with the blackmail attempt has been blocked by German independent email provider Posteo. This means that the blackmailers have not been able to access their mailbox where the payments come into. The software was sophisticated, but the attackers only provided one single email address, and that was shut down very quickly. So it is difficult not to conclude that this was not about money, but that it targeted Ukraine and those associated with Ukraine, either militarily or doing business with Ukraine. The problems that can result from a cyber attack are many, including shutting down the global banking system, the electric grid, and even starting unintended wars. In the final analysis, Ukraine was hit the hardest, suggesting that the attack might be politically motivated. The political motivation likely came from Russia, and it could be a message to the Donald Trump White House about messing with Russia, as has occurred this week. And I'll give you more on that in a minute. According to antivirus vendor ESET, 80% of all the infections were in Ukraine, with Germany second hardest hit at about 9%. Ukraine is Russia's arch enemy now. Germany is America's ally, who has poked its nose into the business between Ukraine and Russia in recent years. NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg warned about the need to step up defense against cyber attacks, saying they could potentially trigger their Article 5 mutual defense commitment. Collective defense means that an attack against one ally is considered an attack against all allies. Initially, this retaliatory attack would occur in cyberspace. So what happened to Ukraine this week could have been considered a war escalation for all Ukraine's allies. In fact, NATO stated this week that cyber, the word cyber, is a military word, meaning that the cyberspace we all play around in actually belongs to the military. This raises another question about who will control the global internet in the future, but that's probably for another broadcast. For sure, the global militaries would come to blows over internet control because, according to NATO, it is a NATO domain on a par with the traditional air, sea, and land arms to become part of an overall alliance of planning and resource allocation. So NATO is now claiming control over the global internet. This week, the House in the United States overwhelmingly passed a measure reaffirming its commitment to NATO's mutual defense clause. Remember that President Trump declined to affirm the U.S. commitment to NATO in a speech that he made on his trip abroad in May. So the U.S. Congressional House decided to reaffirm on behalf of all Americans the United States' commitment to NATO. There may be a connection between the cyber attack that began in Ukraine and spread globally and the U.S. and Russian conflict now happening in Syria. Was this cyber attack Russia's message to the United States about what can happen if Trump keeps threatening Syria and Russia? First, let's look at a story that may indicate the U.S. knows this cyber attack was more than a mere prank on the part of some wayfaring programmer wanting $3,500. The FBI interviewed several U.S. employees of the Moscow-based cybersecurity firm Kaspersky this week as part of its investigation into the company's operations. Agents visited the homes of Kaspersky employees late on Tuesday in multiple U.S. cities, although no search warrants were served. Last month, senior U.S. intelligence officials said in testimony before the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee that they were reviewing government use of software from Kaspersky Lab. The probe may have been to Robert Mueller's Russian election meddling investigation of Donald Trump. Kaspersky Lab confirmed in a statement on Wednesday that FBI agents have had brief interactions with some of its U.S. employees, discussions about the company described as due diligence chats. The FBI declined to comment. Of course, the FBI didn't comment. Most likely, the FBI official reason for the probe has to do with the ongoing investigation into Donald Trump's election activities. It is the FBI that investigates domestic crimes, usually. But what a great cover! Kaspersky's antivirus software is popular in the United States and around the world, though U.S. officials have long been suspicious that the company may have ties to Russian intelligence agencies. Kaspersky has said repeatedly it has no ties to any government and that allegations about its products being used to support Russian espionage are unfounded. Oh, espionage, that's the CIA's domain. But we can't have the U.S. government tipping off the general population that Russia is sending a don't mess with us message to the White House. Thus, the FBI investigates to show the American people that this is a domestic issue, not an international issue. The company said in a separate statement on Wednesday that Kaspersky Lab believes it is completely unacceptable that the company is being unjustly accused without any hard evidence to back up these false allegations. In its 20-year history, the company has abided by the highest ethical business practices, it said. The U.S. intelligence agencies believe the company and its president have had close ties to Russian political and intelligence officials since at least 2012, when a major shakeup of the firm's executive ranks brought in new members with Russian ties to three main intelligence agencies. The FBI would not investigate Kaspersky if there wasn't sufficient suspicion for them to suspect their own government might have hired them to perpetrate a visceral message to the Western world about Russia's intentions. Kaspersky's founder and chief executive Eugene Kaspersky had said during a question and answer session on Reddit that he is willing to appear before the U.S. Senate to dispel any concerns about his company's products. So, just what is the problem between the U.S. and Russia in Syria that might spur the Russians to send this kind of subliminal warning to the White House and the general American population. Well, the U.S. says Syria's government appears to be preparing for a chemical weapons attack and has warned that it will pay a very heavy price if one takes place. The White House said similar activities had been seen before the nerve agent sarin was allegedly dropped on rebel-held Khan Shaykhun in April. Syria's government denies it is preparing another chemical attack. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has previously said that the Khan Shaykhun incident was fabricated. What does the U.S. claim? On Tuesday, Pentagon spokesman Captain Jeff Davis said activity had been spotted at the Syrian Army's Sherat airfield from where the U.S. says jets departed before the Khan Shaykhun incident. White House spokesman Sean Spicer said the U.S. has identified potential preparations for another chemical weapons attack by the Assad regime that would likely result in the mass murder of civilians, including innocent children. Yes, we always have to put the innocent children in there. He added that if Mr. Assad conducts another mass murder attack using chemical weapons, he and his military will pay a heavy price. That is quite a threat. The White House provided no supporting evidence or further explanation. U.S. media had reported that the State Department and Pentagon were caught off guard by the statement, suggesting they were not even consulted. But the White House later said that they were all involved in the process from the beginning. The warning directed at Syria was not enough for Nikki Haley. She further made a statement that included Russia in the heavy consequences that would occur if another chemical attack happened in Syria, and not just Russia either. Iran was included in the threat. I've spoken of the two end-time bears on Jerusalem Next in the past. 2 Kings 2:23-24 says, "And he," that's talking about Elisha, "went up from Beit El, and as he was going up along the way, there came forth little boys out of the city and mocked him, saying, 'Go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head.' And he," Elisha, "turned back and saw them and cursed them in the name of the Lord, and there came forth two she-bears out of the forest and tore 42 of the boys." Of course, I explained that the two she-bears are Russia and Iran, and the 42 boys are relevant to the 42 months of the Great Tribulation. Russia and Iran, those two bears, are both ancient peoples from the same Persian stock. The United States has a Cyrus-like figure, a modern-day Persian person who would like to overthrow the old king, Astyages the Mede. Get it? Trump may not even be aware that he is being used by the Lord in the same manner as ancient Cyrus was, who got rid of the old guard in order to bring in his new thing. Russia and Iran, they're the old thing. They represent a rebellion against the Western New World Order, and they're fighting Trump's attempts to glue the two New World Orders back together. Plus, Trump has a problem in his own home territory. There is an ongoing investigation of his antics with Russia during the election. Even though CNN retracted a story about that this week, the stain of the past remains, and Robert Mueller's investigation is still moving forward. The U.S. escalation of war with Russia could solve both of Trump's problems with one stone, or one nuclear conflict, as it were. There is only one problem, one that I have repeatedly pointed out. The U.S. is not capable of winning a war with Russia. Stay tuned. I'll be right back after these messages with more from Jerusalem Next.
Jerusalem, our feet are standing.
So, Nikki Haley sends a warning from the White House to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad about another possible chemical weapons attack that is also aimed at Russia and Iran. And during testimony before the White House panel on foreign operations, she also called Assad barbaric and said she can't envision a healthy Syria if he remains in power. So the U.S. is moving ahead with trying to remove Bashar al-Assad, Russia's ally. She said the goal is at this point not just to send Assad a message, but to send Russia and Iran a message that if this happens again, we are putting you on notice. And she said, my hope is that the president's warning will certainly get Iran and Russia to take a second look, and I hope that it will caution Assad. Her comments came about 12 hours after White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the U.S. had identified potential preparations for another chemical weapons attack by the Assad regime that would likely result in the mass murder of civilians, including innocent children. Of course, the Pentagon was startled by this development. Trump has no intention of actually going to war with Russia. He only wants to intimidate them. It's part of the art of the deal. When your opponent won't acquiesce through negotiations, threaten them. Do the big takeaway, as it is called. Russia does not back down. Putin and Trump can't play in the same fighting ring. Putin is a fighter, a physically and mentally fit fighter. He is not a negotiator, and he won't be influenced by a negotiating deal maker like Donald Trump. Russia's response to this was to double down on its own rhetoric against the U.S. for the allegations that its ally Syria, President Bashar al-Assad, was planning a new chemical weapons attack. Russian officials said on Wednesday, Russia will respond in proportion if the United States takes military action to prevent what it says could be a chemical attack by Syrian government forces. Sergey Lavrov also said he hopes Russian partners in the region, America, Europe, will take an open and comprehensible approach aimed at de-escalation through normalization of the humanitarian situation. In other words, he warned the U.S. that they need to start taking care of Syria's people who are starving and sick rather than threatening the Middle East with more war. The Russian people are watching our new president and have concluded that the U.S. is the single greatest military threat to their country, above the collective forces of NATO, China, or the Islamic State militant group ISIS. This is according to a Moscow public opinion research poll that came out this week. This is important because if Putin goes to war directly against the United States, not using proxies any longer, he goes directly against America with an all-out war, he will do so with the approval of the Russian people and all the gusto they can muster. The Trump administration's threats to Russia have had a secondary and perhaps more important outcome. It could bolster ISIS into arranging for a chemical attack. A fight between the U.S. and Russia in the skies over Syria would be just the item needed. The U.S. and Russia might forget about ISIS just long enough for them to recover a little bit and to perpetrate such a chemical attack so that the Russian and United States forces would continue fighting. David Hageith of the Great Recession blog put it this way, "What could be smellier and more tempting bait to get ISIS to launch a chemical weapon attack than a U.S. guarantee that any chemical weapon attack in Syria will be automatically blamed on Assad's regime and will automatically result in the U.S. attacking Assad and all of ISIS's other enemies?" Well, he said, today the White House offered ISIS that ironclad guarantee. David postulated that a wider war is exactly what Trump wants. The use of the term red line makes this more than just another line in the sand because of its historic overtones. Assad and everyone else in the world remembers the political price Obama paid for stating that a chemical weapons attack would be a red line for the U.S. that Syria dare not cross. When an attack did happen, which Obama doubted was due to Syria, he refused to cross that line and was criticized for cowardice for years afterward. I think everyone knows that Trump is not about to repeat that kind of retreat from his threat, according to David Hageith. To make it even more clear that the U.S. will interpret a chemical weapon attack in Syria as justifying an attack against Assad's regime, the statement continues as follows. The United States has identified potential preparations for another chemical weapons attack similar to preparations the regime made before its April 4, 2017 chemical weapons attack. That statement ties the current threat to the last time the U.S. attacked Assad based on the U.S. government's claimed belief that he used chemical weapons against the Syrian people, which set a precedent for future responses. As the Washington Times article points out, the White House has revealed none of the particulars that it claims prove that preparations are being made by Assad's military for such an attack. That is not unusual in that nations are often reluctant to reveal their intelligence, lest it also provide clues as to how the intelligence is gathered. But it also calls to mind the unsupported claims made by the Bush regime that Saddam Hussein was making chemical weapons of mass destruction, which he apparently was not doing. So Nikki Haley's raising the specter of a wider war by threatening Syria and Moscow and Tehran sounds like intended justification for a wider war. If this threat is so grave that it means we would have to take on the risk of a wider war that could involve Russia, and if our concern is so humanitarian, why don't we just selectively target the chemical preparations right now, blowing up the preparations facility where the chemicals are being mixed in order to save the human suffering from a later blast? Wouldn't that be better if our humanitarian interests in saving the children, the innocent children, is the end that we seek? The point is obvious by now. When one wants a war, one does not go about trying to prevent the war. Iran's state-funded press TV commented that the U.S. warning risks sparking a major confrontation between the parties of the Syrian conflict and that it will complicate efforts aimed at resolving the conflict. Iran is right. The U.S. and its allies in Syria could find themselves being shot at by Russians and Iranians. That would sure take the spotlight off the Russian election meddling investigation, wouldn't it? There are no coincidences. This week's cyber attack was probably a Russian-orchestrated message to Europe and the United States, What better place to unleash such an evil ransomware than in the very territory where another proxy war is being fought between the U.S. and Russia? And by the way, just as with Robert Mueller's probe of Trump that has not turned up any evidence of wrongdoing, the U.S. intelligence community has said it can find no evidence that the Syrians used a chemical weapon in its last attack. Russia also has strongly denied that Assad's forces were to blame for the attack in April, arguing that the victims had died of exposure to toxic agents released when Syrian warplanes hit a rebel's chemical weapons depot. Former Congressman Ron Paul was interviewed this week in a new Seymour Hersh article in which he said Trump knew Syrian President Bashar al-Assad was not responsible for the chemical attack in April, but decided to bomb anyway. IsraelRising.com gives another reason why Trump may want to deliberately escalate the war with the Russians in Syria. The Syrian regime and its Iranian allies have been gaining ground across the country. According to sources on the ground, the Syrian regime is close to defeating rebel units in Daraa. The Syrian regime has already started to advance in Israel, but has been held back for now by elements of the Free Syrian Army, which Israel covertly backs. If Trump does not make a move soon, says the article, the Free Syrian Army in the Kenitra area will collapse, and at the same time, the gains by the U.S. and Jordan in the east will be effectively reversed. This will complete the Shiite crescent from Tehran to Aleppo and create an existential threat to Israel and Saudi Arabia. In other words, the United States is trying to keep the King of the North coalition from fully forming. The U.S. has little time to maneuver, as Syria, backed by Russia and Iran, are in the final weeks of mopping up from this Syrian war. So, according to this article, it is either now or never. From the Times of Israel, Syria's government and its ally Russia accused Washington on Thursday of concocting a provocation in Syria, which would then be blamed on President Bashar al-Assad's government as alleged use of chemical weapons to justify an attack. In a statement carried by the official news agency, Syria's foreign ministry said it rejects U.S. allegations that Syria was preparing for a chemical weapons attack, describing such accusations as misleading and completely baseless. It is said that the objective of such allegations was to justify new aggression on Syria under ill-founded pretexts, similar to what happened in April when the U.S. struck a Syrian war base which it said had been used to stage a chemical attack on the town of Khan Shakun that killed nearly 90 people. Also on Thursday, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said Moscow has received information that Syrian rebels have already fabricated video materials to accuse Damascus of a chemical attack. She said that, according to the information Russia has, Syria towns of Sarakib and Ariha could serve as venues for the provocation. Both towns are located in the province of Idlib in northwestern Syria and are controlled by the rebels. She claimed that such action could be aimed at derailing the next round of Syria peace talks brokered by Russia, Turkey, and Iran, which is set up for next week in Kazakhstan's capital, Astana. The meeting is meant to determine the specifics related to safety zones in Syria. Zakharova's strongly worded statement reflected soaring tensions between Moscow Moscow and Washington, even as U.S. President Donald Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin are expected to hold their first face-to-face meeting at the sidelines of the G20 summit in Germany next week. Well, for now, Syria has not done anything more than have President Bashar al-Assad take a tour of Russia's military base, Latakia, in Syria. In fact, Bashar al-Assad must have been told by the Russians to shut up and lay low because the media reported on Thursday that the White House says their bluster seems to have averted another chemical attack. Regardless of that, the U.S. is now amassing war hardware off the coast of Israel from where they can launch a new offensive against Syria. Of course, for right now, the U.S. is amassing intelligence gathering aircraft off Syria as tensions rise between the White House and Russia. Three of the most important spy planes in the U.S. inventory have been gathering intelligence off the Syrian coast over the past week. According to the Aviationist website, two RC-135 aircrafts and a Navy P-8 Poseidon, which can eavesdrop and pinpoint enemy radio and radar signals, have been snooping for hours each day. At the same time, chemical weapons activity was taking place at the Syrian Sherat Air Base, the Pentagon said, noting that the base was where the Assad regime's last chemical attack originated. So the Pentagon is going to play along with the White House's suppositions. While those spy planes were around, President Assad was visiting Russian troops and jets at the Latakia Air Base, apparently in a show of defiance. Meanwhile, the American aircraft carrier, the USS George H.W. Bush, will be paying a visit to Israel. It will be the first time in 17 years that a U.S. aircraft carrier visits Israel. The USS H.W. Bush will arrive on Saturday in Haifa port with a crew of about 5,700 sailors and pilots and about 90 aircraft of various kinds, according to media reports. In other words, a new jumping-off point. Apparently, jumping off into Syria from Jordan is not enough. Now the U.S. is amassing military hardware at a new spot off the coast of Israel. It should be clear by now that situations are not what they seem as they're being reported in the press. The cyber attack might have been a criminal act, but more likely, it was a subterfuge, a message from Russia to the United States using the only Western proxy battleground there is, Ukraine. The White House is attempting to perpetrate another false flag event in Syria, to blame on Bashar al-Assad. Even after U.S. intelligence did not find evidence that it was al-Assad's troops that committed the last chemical attack, the White House continues to insist that it was an attack by Damascus. The fact that the Pentagon announced they have no idea why the White House made such blustering threats toward Damascus and even Russia and Iran is a clue that something underhanded is going on from within the White House. President Trump's motives are now being debated in the mainstream and alternate media. Is he trying to divert attention away from the Russian election investigation? Has he grown impatient with his efforts to coerce Russia and its allies back under the authority of the Western New World Order? Or is he trying to escalate the war to justify increased bombing and ground troops because the U.S.-backed Syrian rebels have almost lost to Damascus? Let's take a look at this in Scripture. Isaiah 17:1 says, The prophecy concerning the fall of Damascus. Behold, Damascus shall cease to be a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. The city of Damascus became a city under siege once before under Tiglath-Pileser in the fourth year of King Ahaz. That's according to 2 Kings 16, verse 9. But Damascus did not cease to be a city altogether at that time. This prophecy, while having been partially fulfilled in the past, must have its fulfillment completed in our time. But there is a huge warning for the Ephraimite nations and the current Jewish political nation, Israel, that goes with the fall of Damascus. Isaiah 17 verse 3 says, "The might also shall cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant of Ephraim will be like the glory of the children of Israel, says the Lord of hosts." Making Damascus fall in this fashion will take all the resources of the United States and her allies to the point that they now lack the strength to fight another war. This is how the United States, Europe, Australia, and the other Western Ephraimite nations could be so easily conquered. Now, what does it mean that the remnant of Ephraim will be like the glory of the children of Israel? Well, that means that Ephraim will be to the point of being defeated. The glory of Israel will be attacked by Iran. Remember in Daniel 11. Ephraim will be like that same glory, subject to attack by the king of the north, Iran, and its ally, Russia. Now, Isaiah 17, verse 4. "And in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob shall wane, and the fatness of his flesh shall wax lean." The warning of the lack of strength in the West will affect the Jews in Israel. The glory of Jacob, the political state of Israel, that is the only visible evidence of Yahweh's kingdom on earth at present, will suffer. Israel is upheld by financing out of the West, out of the Ephraimite nations. But the might, the economic strength, the finances to pay Israel to continue being the Middle East's sheriff, as I have quipped about Israel's role in the Middle East in the past, will be over. Israel and the West will then be subject to defeat when Damascus falls for good. Esau will completely break the yoke from his back at that point. The Islamization of the globe will begin in earnest then. May our God and King be with his people when this happens. Will the fall of Damascus happen before or during the Great Tribulation? I don't know. Will it happen soon or in the next few years of Donald Trump's presidency? I don't know. The Lord has not shown me his timing. Why doesn't the Lord show us how these events will be timed? I believe it is because he doesn't want us getting lazy in our spiritual walk. He doesn't want us thinking we have time before it all starts and begin to let our walk with him become lax. Yeshua told us to watch. He gave us the events to watch for. The fall of Damascus is just one of the events that we're to watch for. Haggai chapter 2 gives us the timing of two events to watch for, the last day of Sukkot and the day before Hanukkah in some future year. We need to be keeping the feasts in order to be able to watch. When the United States becomes weak and worn out from war making, there will be an attack by the two bears, Russia and Iran, on the United States mainland. When it is over, let Jerusalem come to mind. Head east, people. Head east. Remember, Jerusalem is our next destination. Shabbat Shalom.
Worthy is the one who sits upon